We have felt confident from the very beginning that we would win at this level. I think that we feel really heartened by the decisions in Quebec and Ontario.
I picked Sick Today as the title of the record because it kind of encompassed all the feelings that I was having in the writing of the songs.
What's important to me is being honest, and by being honest and telling sort of my own truth in my songs, my bisexuality comes out.
One of the technicians called it a pop manifesto because of all different styles that we're using. It's pretty diverse.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Spain's parliament says I don't to same-gender partners. Canadian couples carry their case to the BC Appeals Court. And political, personal, and polymorphous words and music from the audiophile. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 22, 2003. Spain's parliament this week rejected a move to legally recognize same-gender couples. Although the ruling People's Party was the only party opposing the package of five separate bills introduced by five different parties, its absolute majority sufficed to kill it. A People's Party spokesperson said the proposals were unconstitutional.
But the full bench of Australia's family court this week upheld the legality of a trans man's marriage to a woman, even though he retains female genitalia. The federal government has been challenging the marriage of the Sydney trans man known in court as Kevin ever since it was contracted in 1999. In late 2001, one family court judge declared the marriage valid, and this week the full family court dismissed the government's appeal of that ruling. Australia's Attorney General Darrell Williams is already seeking to further appeal this week's ruling to the Australian Supreme Court. The government has argued that the marriage was invalid because Kevin was identified as a female on his original birth certificate, even though he was granted a revised birth certificate in 1997. The court found it more significant that Kevin was generally recognized by the community as a man at the time of his marriage.
It may be the world's first such ruling to recognize a sex change without genital surgery. Although Kevin underwent breast reduction, a hysterectomy, and hormone treatment in 1995, the court recognized that it was too risky and expensive for him to have male genitalia constructed. Kevin told reporters after the ruling, "Our marriage has been described as a transsexual marriage, but in fact it is just an ordinary marriage, a mix of challenges, triumphs, and joy as other marriages are. We're a typical Australian couple, an average man and woman, raising our precious children responsibly in a loving home." His wife, known as Jennifer, bore two children after their marriage by artificial insemination with donated sperm.
And that's just one of several recent victories for transgenders in Australia and other nations. In Australia, it was made public last month that an unnamed Brisbane 17-year-old had become the youngest person in the nation to begin a gender reassignment program. The biological male has begun hormone treatments and publicly presenting as a female after undergoing physiological and psychological testing. She hopes to undergo sex reassignment surgery in 2 or 3 years. Her family is supportive, but although officials at her school also stood behind her, the harassment she suffered from other students drove her to leave school.
Also last month, Perth area resident Alex McFarlane received what's believed to be Australia's first passport recognizing intersex status. McFarlane has both a Y chromosome and two X chromosomes, although genital surgery was performed shortly after birth for a male appearance. The Department of Foreign Affairs initially claimed that passports can only show F or M in the box identifying sex, but McFarlane countered that either would be fraudulent. After months of correspondence, the department finally sent McFarlane a passport showing X for sex, a third option allowed by the International Civil Aviation Organization for machine-readable passports to signify either intersex or unspecified sex. McFarlane had previously obtained from his native state of Victoria what's believed to be Australia's first birth certificate to identify sex not as male or female, but as indeterminate, also known as intersex. McFarland told the West Australian newspaper, intersex individuals should not have to break the law by pretending to be male or female in order to vote, marry, hold a license, or own property.
A Canadian federal court last week ordered the national prison system to provide sex reassignment surgery for inmates in cases where doctors believe it is essential. Justice Carolyn Layden Stevenson rejected Corrections Canada's appeal of transgender inmate Cynthia Kavanaugh's 2001 victory in the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. The federal judge upheld that tribunal's finding that the prison system's blanket ban on SRS constituted illegal discrimination based on sex and disability. In Kavanaugh's case, doctors had already approved the surgery before her incarceration. Corrections Canada based its policy on the high cost of SRS, but Justice Layden Stevenson wrote that the right of government to allocate resources as it sees fit is not unlimited.
On the other side of the law, Scotland Yard this week announced its first hire of a transsexual police recruit. The unnamed trans man had been a civilian employee of London's Metropolitan Police before applying to become an officer. A police spokesperson said, "We welcome this opportunity as this is an underrepresented group in the Met." That's despite anticipated legal issues should the trans man perform a search on a suspect, since Britain does not yet revise birth certificates following sex reassignment surgery. Legislation for amended birth certificates is now in progress, spurred by recent rulings by the European courts.
Also, because of those European rulings, Britain's government is in the process of asking the nation's sports groups to reconsider their treatment of transsexuals. Without revised birth certificates, UK transsexuals have been restricted to competition in their gender as identified at birth. But now the Department for Culture, Media and Sport has written to more than 300 sports governing bodies that the whole thrust of the judgments of the European Court is that transsexual people should acquire the status, rights and responsibilities of the acquired gender. The implication may be that transsexual people recognized in the acquired gender will be able to compete in that gender.
The U.S. state of Florida has also recognized a trans man's sex change and the legal validity of his marriage to a woman, as a circuit court judge this week issued a groundbreaking ruling granting him parental rights. Florida law explicitly prohibits both adoptions by gays and lesbians and same-gender marriages. But Judge Gerard O'Brien broke new ground for the state as he awarded Michael Kantaras primary custody of both the children born by his estranged wife, Linda Kantaras. The decision confirms both Michael's legal adoption of Linda's son born before their marriage and his listing as the father of the daughter she bore after their marriage by artificial insemination with sperm donated by Michael's brother. In the process, it affirms that Michael is legally a male and that his 10-year marriage was valid until its 1999 dissolution.
Judge O'Brien spent more than a year writing a ruling that runs to more than 800 pages. It says that the marriage law of Florida clearly provides that marriage shall take place between one man and one woman. It does not provide when such status of being a man or woman shall be determined. There is no statutory requirement that the marriage license applicants shall prove their gender by producing a birth certificate.
One of Michael Kantaras' attorneys, Karen During of the San Francisco-based National Center for Lesbian Rights, said, "To our knowledge, this is the first transgender marriage case in the U.S. in which extensive medical evidence was presented, giving the court a full and fair opportunity to really understand the contemporary medical consensus about transsexual people." But after more than 4 years of bitter legal battling since he filed for divorce in 1998, Kantaras himself said, "I'm so relieved. Now my kids and I can get on with our lives in peace. The most important thing to me is for the kids to know they're safe and can love both their mother and their dad. They shouldn't have to decide." Linda Kantaras was granted liberal visitation.
But heterosexual couples won't be able to get their marriages licensed, at least not by two Unitarian ministers in Massachusetts. In a sermon earlier this month, Reverend Fred Small told the First Unitarian Church in Boston, "I will joyfully perform religious weddings for heterosexual or same-sex couples, but I will not sign the license unless and until the Commonwealth of Massachusetts extends to same-sex couples the benefits, protections, and responsibilities of marriage. If heterosexual couples wish to legalize their bond, I will direct them to a justice of the peace." The congregation responded with a standing ovation. This week, Reverend Jay Deacon of the Unitarian Society of Northampton and Florence made a similar announcement in a press release, and he believes more Unitarian ministers will follow suit.
And finally, Thailand's famous cross-dressing volleyball team has moved beyond acceptance to become a marketing asset. A film based on the real-life Iron Ladies, called Satrilek in Thailand, was a big hit there in 2000. Now the sequel, Satrilek 2, is about to debut in Bangkok and Singapore, and Pizza Hut is going along for the ride in an unusual joint promotion. It's a first for both the fast food and movie industries in Thailand. Pizza Hut, the world's largest pizza chain, is shelling out more than $2 million for a campaign including Satrilek, collector cards, and figurines. At Thailand's 83 Pizza Huts, that's expected to boost sales by 20%.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending February 22, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Greg Gordon. One queer singer-songwriter is sick today, but you can still come close to another, while a third has a free gift for everyone who stays tuned. But first...
due to one little word, Mary. See a palace arise from a two-room flat due to one little word, Mary.
The latest skirmish in the Canadian battle for same-gender marriage began on February 10th as the British Columbia Court of Appeal heard the case of eight couples who are seeking the right to marry. Backed by Canada's national queer rights lobby group EGAL, Equality for Gays and Lesbians Everywhere, the couples argue that refusing queers the right to marry violates Canada's constitutional guarantee of equality regardless of sexual orientation. The federal government is arguing against their application, supported by two coalitions of religious interveners, including one of the America's leading anti-queer groups, Focus on the Family. With more, here's Queer FM's Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
It feels a bit like a family reunion at a home in East Vancouver. A weary group of lawyers, activists, and same-sex couples are relaxing on sofas and easy chairs, munching on snack foods, and celebrating the end of a three-day hearing into their lawsuit seeking the couple's right to marry. In the summer of 2000, this same group of people was at this same house, marking the end of the original hearing of the case at the BC Supreme Court. 2 months later, their enthusiasm turned to disappointment when Mr. Justice Ian Pitfield handed down a shocking ruling against the couples.
Not only do we not have the rights under the Charter of Rights to get married, but even Parliament can't legislate to let us get married.
John Fisher speaks for EGAL, Canada's national queer rights lobby group.
He didn't go quite so far as to recriminalise homosexuality, but you kind of got the impression that if he could have, or if somebody had raised it, then he would have pounced on that one too.
Since that time, lawsuits seeking marriage rights for same-gender couples have been argued in Ontario and Quebec, and both of those cases were decided in favor of queer equality. Now the couples in this case are hoping the momentum from those decisions will sway the three judges hearing this case. Still, there are plenty of hurdles to overcome. Ironically, one of the challenges facing the couple's lawyers is to counter the government's argument that because same-sex couples in Canada have nearly all of the rights of heterosexual couples already, denying them marriage is not discrimination. Rather, it is simply a matter of separate but equal. At the end of the hearing, the couples who watched said that they were happy with how their case was presented. But John Fisher of EGAL did not feel prepared to predict the outcome.
We've been used in the other cases to a fair bit of judicial intervention, and they'll interrupt and they'll ask questions and they'll challenge you and stuff like that. Whereas this one, they, They asked some and seemed to warm up a little bit towards the end, but for most of the first 2 of the 3 days, they were sitting there pretty quietly. And so it leaves you with a bit of a sense of, okay, are they getting it? Are they not getting it? Where is that? Are they not asking questions because they think it's all clear and they understand and they accept it? Or is it because they just don't want to be here? This is going to be a very hard one to call.
We have felt confident from the very beginning that we would win at this level. I think that we feel really heartened by the decisions in Quebec and Ontario.
Elizabeth Barbeau is one half of one of the couples in the case.
I mean, I was convinced we would win the first time and I was crushed when I was completely wrong. So I'm not going to sort of make a guess this time other than everybody says that we should feel really positive, and so I do.
The judges announced at the end of the hearing that they expect to take a long time reaching their decision. Lawyers for the couples suggest this means we could be waiting 9 months or more for a ruling. For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
Hi, I'm Chris Carter. Being the first openly gay government minister in New Zealand is a great privilege. Almost as great as being able to listen to a quality queer radio program like This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
As we once again open up our audio file on the queer music scene, we find an activist singer's debut, a bi-songwriter's first live CD, and a gay troubadour's much-anticipated second outing.
I thought I saw your face today, and I don't know how to explain. 'Cause we were gonna do great things. You would go to school and I would sing my songs.
Kevin Allred calls himself a singer, songwriter, activist. And that's easy to see on his debut album called Sick Today. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. Kevin's CD mixes the personal with the political as he uses just his acoustic guitar to engage a listener with songs not afraid to leave a message.
I picked Sick Today as the title of the record because it kind of encompassed all the feelings that I was having in the writing of the songs. I was feeling frustrated with a lot of different aspects of life, whether it be personal, as in relationships, or with events going on in the country, in the political aspect. I was just sick, so I used that title to name the whole record.
I'm sick today of all the politicians and their lobbies and the NRA, they only tell us lies. And we eat it up, they dish it out, you can see it in their eyes, they're filling up our cup.
Find out more about Kevin Allred and his CD, Sick Today, at www.kevinallred.com. That's www.kevinallred.com.
Another singer-songwriter is Edie Carey, who has a very intimate style that draws you in, like she was confiding to an old friend.
And that style and honesty are perhaps more evident on her first live album called Come Close.
As a little girl, I came down to the water with a little stone in my hand. It would shimmer and sing, and we knew everything. As a little girl, I came down.
I think mostly what's important to me is being honest. And by being honest and telling sort of my own truth in my songs, my bisexuality comes out. And so people who are looking for it are going to see it maybe more readily, and people who aren't maybe won't notice. For the most part, I just try to be really good at my art, and then if people know about my sexuality, great.
I can be funny when I talk and too damn serious when I sing. I wish I could just lighten up. And I go with the flow but obsess over every little thing. I wish my head would just shut up. I lose my heart without looking down. It could be Sarah, Chloe, or Clyde. I suspect the questions been going round as to whether I'll ever decide.
The full title of Edie Carey's CD is called Come Close, the Live Photo Album, and you can find out more about it at www.ediecarey.com. That's EDIECAREY.com.
The long-awaited second CD by David Clement is called Your Free Gift.
And we think the gift is the talent he brings to the variety of styles on the album.
You sing like an old man, shuffling cards, examining your hands, absent-mindedly stringing words together. We dance like old friends in a haze, and we talk too loud.
When we were recording it, one of the technicians called it a pop manifesto because of all different styles that we were using. And I think it's varied. It's rock. It's pretty diverse. I think it's pretty obvious that you have a bunch of different musicians from a bunch of different places in there.
What if it's true? I was never meant for you. What if it's fate? Some little piece of me just needs to hate. What if a drug could be the thing to save me from myself? What if restraint could save my life and promote mental health? Well, then it goes.
Your Free Gift, the latest CD by David Clement, isn't really free, but you can find out more about it at www.davidclement.com. That's David, CLEMENT.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
I wake up so full of faith. When it goes.
Hi, I'm This Way Out Associate Producer Lucia Chappell. This program has been on the air for nearly 15 years now, made possible largely through the support of individual listeners. Our current fundraising campaign stars three classic programs from our history, now available on CD thanks to the Pacifica Radio Archives. In this brief sampler from the three CDs, you'll hear about the genesis of the first National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights, get a taste of some of the music featured in our Audiophile 2002 Year in Review, and recall the shocking assassination of San Francisco Supervisor Harvey Milk in an excerpt from the documentary Diminished Capacity.
The struggle of lesbians and gay men is a real and particular and inseparable part of the struggle of all oppressed people within this country.
It was important to me to be a part of our march on Washington.
We are not in the same place we were 10 years ago. It's time we recognize that this is a national issue.
October gas supplies could fall as much as 5% below demand.
It's time to get to Washington and win.
2,000 New York police are guarding Castro along with the Secret Service, who plan to carry machine guns.
The days are over when we're afraid. You see gay people all around here are not afraid of having their pictures taken 5 years ago. Well, you couldn't have got a group like this out even 5 years ago.
1,000 nuclear activists still on hand and planning further action.
I had a really good conversation with a man who said that he was really happy to see people demonstrating again, that he thought it was a great thing. And then when he found out that we were gay, he said that he didn't think that we should be exposing ourselves as much in Washington.
Many foreign policy critics in the U.S., longtime opponents of the overthrown Shah, have recently begun to criticize the extremely anti-leftist nature of Iran's Islamic revolution.
Is America ready for it? Absolutely. I believe with all of my heart they have to get ready for it.
Like me, president.
There are 22 million homosexuals in this country, so they're going to have to get ready for it.
Thousands of people were on hand at Logan Airport to hear the Pope's first words in America.
America, America. God, grace, and peace.
And here comes the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights.
Hey there, stranger, long time no see.
Have I told you in the last 5 minutes that I love you?
I miss the dog more than I miss you.
It's a hold upon your soul.
Everything that's real takes some time to know.
Just say you love me.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan
White. Has been found guilty of one count each of voluntary manslaughter.
It has now broken loose. Cops are now bashing heads.
Here's a remorseless man, a cold-blooded, remorseless killer.
The convicted assassin of San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk has been released in the Los Angeles area.
I think that Dan White will probably look over his shoulder for the rest of his life, because he'll never know if there's someone back there with a gun that's ready to blow his brains out.
You've been listening to excerpts from the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights radio documentary, the Audiophile 2002 Year in Review, and Diminished Capacity. These programs are available in their entirety through an arrangement with the Pacifica Radio Archives. For more information, visit our website at www.thiswayout.org or contact us at the addresses we'll give at the end of the show.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, Chris Ambidge, Heather Kitching, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material, Kelly Hunter performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WCSB Cleveland, Ohio, CFUR Prince George, British Columbia, KZSE Santa Cruz, California, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.